Chapter 20, Taking Responsibility for Your Anger. Sometimes a scream is better than a thesis. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Anger is the most common emotion resulting from a pushed button. As we've seen on the button meter, it bubbles up in many degrees, from frustration to rage. It's an emotion that humans don't like to have, don't like to see, don't like to deal with, and certainly don't like their children to have. Many of us grew up in a household where anger was unacceptable, let alone encouraged. Because our anger in childhood was so often met with disapproval or denial, we learned that it was a bad emotion. We learned to either make up excuses for it, blame it on others, or suppress it. So most of us have no tools with which to deal with anger productively, either in ourselves or in our children. Our beliefs tell us it's wrong. So when we feel it, we often react as we did when we were children, either exploding it or imploding it. If I had to back down when my parents told me what to do and never heard my side of the story, I'm probably going to react harshly when my child refuses to back down and doesn't do what I tell her. When we get into a power struggle, the fight is between my child and myself as a child. Neither of us knows how to take responsibility. How our anger plays out. When we get angry at our children, we want them to pay. Punishment, anything that physically or emotionally puts down, hurts, or humiliates a child, is retaliatory manipulation for making us feel angry. We isolate them, we hit them, we yell at them, we deny them their privileges, all as a means of appeasing our anger and chastising theirs. Punishment does nothing to teach responsibility or accountability for one's behavior. Instead, it can shame or instill fear in the child, which sometimes stops the behavior, giving the parent the desired result. Mostly, it teaches children the six R's of punishment: resentment, rebellion, retaliation, reduced self-esteem, repression, and revenge. My 5-year-old has a request, a mother announced with a smile in our group one day. He wants me to find out from my parenting group what else I could do besides sending him to his room when he does something wrong. He says that going to his room doesn't work at all because it only makes him madder and he doesn't learn anything. We were amazed at the perception of this little boy. The mother said his exact words were, "You want me to think about what happened, but all I do is think about how mad I am." But when we get our buttons pushed, creative options are generally out of our reach. We get angry and we punish. Then we get more angry when the punishment doesn't work and the behavior happens again. Then we punish more. The cycle continues. We fear that if there's no blame, no punishment, we're letting our kids get away with it. Owning your anger. We do not have to be free of anger to be neutral, to focus on the problem, and to stop blaming. We have a right to our anger as much as our children have a right to theirs. We need to honor our feelings, but we also need to take responsibility for them, to own them. We can do this by paying attention to how we speak to our children.
1. You are such a slob. Just look at this mess. How many times do I have to tell you? I'm not cleaning up your garbage. You're not leaving this house until that kitchen is clean. 2. I feel so angry when I see food left out in the kitchen. I should not have to clean up this mess. I want you to clean it up now, please. You can go to your friends as soon as you're finished.
Which expression of anger is dumped on the child?
Which is held responsibly? Which creates a gap? Which message is clear? Which child is left feeling ashamed, and which child is left feeling responsible? Which child can hear the request, and which becomes parent deaf? Even when spoken in anger, the message to the child can be heard when the anger is owned. In the first scenario, the father is in effect blaming his daughter for his anger and his reaction. How many times do I have to tell you? In the second, the response is honest and responsible, even though anger is expressed. The child knows her father's angry. She may feel guilty about leaving the kitchen a mess, good guilt, but she will probably not feel guilty about causing her father's anger, bad guilt. So it's easier for her to take responsibility and do as she is asked. Julie came into class saying, "There's construction going on at my house. After weeks of dealing with the mess every day, I had a meltdown. I had already had a bad day, and I walked in the house to the familiar sheetrock dust covering everything. In the middle of the mess was my 8-year-old son Cameron's Legos all over the place. It was the last straw. I lost it. I fled upstairs, screaming to Cameron, 'I have to go to my room, and I need you to leave me alone. When I come back, I want those Legos picked up. I can't bear this house any longer.' A few minutes later, I heard a soft knock on my door. I called, 'Come in.' Cam slowly opened the door and peeked his head around. He said very quietly, 'I just wanted you to know that I understand how you feel, and I'll be downstairs if you want to talk about it.'" Isn't that amazing? Julie had spent many years validating Cameron's feelings when he had his nutties, as they fondly referred to his perpetual tantrums. It had paid off. Now she was able to have her own nutties, but without blaming Cameron. He saw how angry she felt, but he did not feel responsible for making it better. When she asked him to clean up his Legos, he did it without an argument. Her anger was powerful. He heard it, but he was free to empathize and cooperate rather than feel responsible for it or attacked by it. "You make me so mad" is a common phrase that signifies the enormity of blame we place on others for our anger. We have heard it, we pass it on. It's time to stop the cycle and acknowledge instead, "I get so angry when." The meaning and hence the responsibility shifts dramatically. We generate our own anger. It's okay to be angry, but we must own it. Don't ask your children to take responsibility for you. Whenever Cheryl's 6-year-old daughter Nicole balked at the clothes her mother had worked so hard to buy, Cheryl felt like strangling her. Nicole complained that they were too puffy or too stupid. Cheryl's retort would go something like, "Do you have any idea how many hours it took me to make enough money to buy these clothes for you? You don't know how lucky you are. How can you say you hate them?" Nicole would fight back, and they inevitably ended up in a power struggle. Cheryl's reactions ranged from, "You will wear what I tell you to wear," to, "Fine, wear whatever you want and see if I care." Nicole was left in a puddle of blame either way. Cheryl came from a very poor family. The few clothes the children had were hand-me-downs. Cheryl did not own any new clothing until she was a teenager and bought it herself. With ingenuity, she pulled herself out of the mire of her past, but she still tries desperately to hide it. Her daughter's many beautiful clothes are one of the signatures of her achievement. She could not understand why her daughter was not thankful for her abundance. "Can you see that your anger is demanding that Nicole take responsibility for your shame?" I asked. Cheryl got it immediately. In Seed of the Soul, author Gary Zukav states so well, "If you do not hold yourself accountable for what you experience, you will hold someone else accountable. And if you're not satisfied with what you experience, you will seek to change it by manipulating that person." Children should not bear the burden of our ups and downs. They should not have to ride the waves and wonder when things will calm down, or worse, think that they have to be good in order for us to be calm. They should not have to worry about what kind of a mood we're in and have no idea what to expect when we walk in the door. "You've given me a headache. Don't make me come after you. What will people think? Be good for Grandma. Now, see what you made me do? You're going to put me in an early grave." These are all remarks that put the responsibility for the adult's well-being on the child. If your parents expected you to take responsibility for their feelings, it's logical that you would expect the same of your child. Taking responsibility builds good boundaries. When we take responsibility for our own feelings, we will be better able to understand that our children are responsible for theirs as well. Giving them responsibility for their feelings and behavior enables us to remain detached and neutral. From this place, we can support them and encourage them instead of fight with them or try to fix their feelings and problems. A healthy boundary allows them to figure out what to do and teaches them to take responsibility for themselves. Jane has been coming to parenting classes since her now 4-year-old Michael was a newborn. She had been through 4 tumultuous years with a very sensitive, yet strong-willed child who expresses his persistent anger by screaming, long and loud and often. Jane has struggled with her own anger toward him, often feeling pummeled and punished by his behavior. She had resented his neediness and demands on her and had tried long and hard to make his anger go away. After her work on diffusing her buttons, she understood that she was not the cause of, and therefore not responsible for, his anger. "What a burden it lifted off my shoulders," she said. She shared in class a story that would have driven the best of us into a rage. One morning, Michael was at the kitchen table for breakfast. Knowing how particular Michael is about how his toast is cut, she asked him if he would like to cut it himself. He said she could do it. She cut the toast, put it on a plate, and set it down for him. Suddenly he screamed that it was too far away from him. "I have to bend way over to get it!" In the past, his shrill whine would have provoked her to scream back at him and either resentfully do what he demanded or ignore him and incite a tantrum. Now she understood his temperament and knew that this was his problem, not hers. Neutrally, she said, "Oh, it's too far away from you?" She acknowledged him. "Then you can pull it closer to you." She gave him ownership of his problem. "No, I can't reach it. You have to do it," Michael said, getting more hysterical. Knowing how easily Michael escalates to the point of no return, she said, "Okay, but in a minute after I put this away." She knew he needed her help to get back in control, but she also let him know that she had needs as well. This time he was willing to wait. She moved the plate closer, but it was still not right. "It's not turned the right way," he screamed. This could have been anyone's breaking point. She wanted to yell, "Fine, I'll show you where I can turn it and throw the toast in the garbage." Instead, Jane detached. "You had a picture in your head of how you wanted the toast to be," she said compassionately, focusing on the problem, not Michael's stubbornness. "I didn't know what that picture was. It upset you when I put it down a different way. You can turn it just the way you want it." She explained to him what had happened so that he understood why he was upset. 4-year-olds often don't know. Validated his feelings so he knew he was okay, and taught him responsibility for his problem. Masterfully, Jane identified what was happening for him. Instead of perceiving his behavior as bratty and manipulative, she understood his perception and validated it without losing herself in a battle. Michael immediately calmed down. The tension and stress visibly left his taut body, and he responded with, "Oh." He turned the plate the way he wanted it. Jane empowered Michael to solve his own problem because she gave him the right to his anger without denying it or disapproving of it. He was back to himself, and Jane had helped him get there by giving him what he needed instead of what he asked for. Rather than feeling robbed of patience, energy, and control, she felt high, energized, and without a doubt that she had done the right thing for Michael and herself. A boundary was drawn between Jane and Michael that allowed them to each be themselves. Jane said, "Now I know what it is. It's like this line that I can draw. He's on one side with his troubles, his problems, and I'm on my side with mine. He's in his world, his bubble, having his own little crisis. It has nothing to do with me. Now I can make a connection with him on his terms." When anger is a signal for change. Confronting suppressed anger, which can manifest as depression, illness, or anxiety, is a fearful and uncomfortable undertaking. We experience the anxiety physically in our bodies. Our hearts race, our voice quivers, we may cry or feel ashamed. This is not fun. By sweeping our anger under the carpet, we get to avoid feeling the discomfort of it, and we get approval from others for not expressing it. It appears we're doing ourselves a service. However, anger tends to leak out as sarcasm, criticism, resentment, guilt trips, even passive-aggressive behaviors such as chronic lateness. But when we least expect it, it explodes, and we have little control over it when it does. "I couldn't help it. I couldn't stop myself," laments a guilty parent who has just screamed at his child. But what if you were to acknowledge the anger and accept it as a provoker of needed change? You don't need to make the change happen. Just allow the anger. Many fear that this would unleash an untold amount of rage. Take the risk. Let it up a bit at a time. Just be sure to own it. The teapot theory. If you put a pot of water with a lid on the stove, when the water boils, it will blow its lid by the strength of the steam, and the water will boil over. A tea kettle, however, has an air valve to allow the steam to escape. Anger, emotions of any kind, is like that steam. If it doesn't have an outlet, it may cause a person to blow his lid or boil over into rage. But if it has an outlet, it can release to maintain equilibrium. Opening up, stage 3, conscious competency. Increased ability to access emotions increases consciousness and creativity. When you take responsibility for your thoughts and emotions, your perception changes. You have detached. It doesn't matter exactly what words or tools you use, because you will be coming from a place of understanding, your own emotional intelligence. In stage 3, we can no longer blame our anger on others, and when we become detached, we can see solutions, often for the first time. After I had my heart-to-heart with my daughter Molly the morning I changed my perspective of her behavior and acknowledged how hard mornings were for her, it was as if my attic had been cleaned out. Suddenly, I was able to think clearly again. My mind wasn't cluttered anymore with anger and fear and impatience. I found 2 tiny decorative jars with lids that we had in the house and asked Molly to pick which one she liked best. She loved them both but made her choice. I put them on the shelf over the bathroom sink. Then I got 10 pennies and made a pile of them between the 2 jars. Each morning when we got dressed together in the bathroom, the first one dressed got to put a penny in her jar. We didn't make it a race, we just had a little incentive. Molly loved taking the little lid off her jar, dropping the penny in, and putting the lid back. When the pile was gone, we emptied out our jars, counted the pennies to see who had won, and piled them up again to start over. Some mornings, Molly just couldn't get it together and didn't care about getting the penny. On those mornings, it was clear to me that she needed a little extra attention, so I helped her get dressed with no feelings of resentment. It was just not a problem for me anymore.